Stash number 13040, Kenneth Bungard, Reel 1.
Whereabouts were you born, please?
Northampton.
And which year was that?
1923.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a cord wainer, which is a shoemaker.
Did you go to school in Southampton?
Northampton.
In Northampton, rather?
No. I was born there. But I was immediately brought back to Chertsey and have been there ever since.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that would have been in 38?
Yeah, I suppose it would, yes.
Before the war started?
Yes.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was actually apprenticed to be a dental technician, known as a dental mechanic in those days. But we love to change names.
And what was your reaction to the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I think everybody was expecting it. It was working up to that.
But were you dismayed in any way?
I don't think so. I think I was too young to really fully understand what it meant.
Were you living in Chertsey at that time?
Yes.
So whereabouts were you living when the Blitz started in 1940?
In Chertsey.
Did any bombs drop in this area?
Yes, they did, yes. And people were killed and houses blown down.
Can you describe what you saw of it?
Really weren't able to do very much at all. I think because there are a lot of woods around here which were stacked up with ammunition in little huts, that they may have been going for those. Several attempts were made with incendiaries and what have you in this area, just across where the hospital is actually now.
Were any of the ammunition dumps hit, do you think?
No, there were fires there, because when I joined the AFS, the Auxiliary Fire Service, we used to dash up there on occasion to keep things under control.
What made you decide to join the AFS?
Well, one was expected to join something, the Home Guard or Wardens or something, and it appealed to me, the AFS.
And what type of training did you get for it?
They did give us training. They had some old houses which were not used, and they'd set them on fire, and we'd have to put the fire out and climb in through windows and rescue dummies and so forth. And, of course, the use of the equipment. We had training on that.
What was the equipment?
Well, the firefighting equipment. Well, we were never on the large engine, but we used to have a pump which we towed behind a car.
Did the training and equipment seem adequate for what you had to do?
Oh, yes.
What did the professionals in the fire service think of the AFS people?
I'm not too sure about that, actually. We used to get on all right.
There wasn't any animosity towards you?
I don't think so, no.
Any stories that you can recount that you had with the AFS?
Yes. We used to, in the evening, we'd pick up a car and put a pump on the back and go to some sort of outpost. where we'd spend the night, awaiting a call should it come. And one of the outposts was at Ottershaw, Brook Hall, a little local hall there. And the whole place was full of anti-gas equipment and what have you. And unfortunately, because of petrol rationing, and we used to leave our car outside naturally and the pump, there were occasions when petrol was stolen. So it was decided on one occasion that we would bring the petrol in with us in cans to prevent it being stolen. One of the fellows did this, and as he walked in with his can, it was leaking. There were gas radiators, and quite suddenly the whole place went up in flames. Everything inside this place seemed to be full of inflammables. And there was nothing we could do about it. It was that quick, and we had the humiliation of having to phone the fire brigade at Chertsey to tell them that our place was burning down. And it was burnt to the ground.
Was this just the AFS that was responsible for it?
Well, yes, all part-timers, yes. We seemed to enter the Royal Navy rather quickly after that point.
Three of you?
Three of us, yes.
Coming back to the bombing in Chertsey, do you remember the name of the road that was hit by the bombs?
Was it Percroft? Yes, Percroft Road. Yes, there's one at Bittam's Lane, which is just 100 yards that way.
All these fields, and it dropped smack on a bungalow.
So you said those bombs fell on those council houses.
Yes.
Do you remember any other streets or buildings or anything that was hit in the Chertsey area?
Yes, some... The bombs were dropped on the local cemetery. They may have been going for the railway line, because there's a cemetery on either side and the railway line runs in between. In fact, they hit both cemeteries and missed the line. But the funny part of it was that there was a house in one cemetery, and in Addlestone, and the man and his wife had gone to bed, and it was a two-storey house. And the bomb blew out one wall. The floor collapsed one way, and they came tearing out in a double bed with wheels on, were completely unharmed, and were shooting down the road.
Was this in 40, 41 or later?
I think it might have been later, wasn't it? I think, yes, it's difficult to remember.
But would you say that the people in Chertsey suffered very much from the bombing?
Compared with London, no. Although this area was full of evacuees, it was supposed to be a safe area, but we did have a number of bombs.
Did you have evacuees in your house?
Yes.
Can you tell me about them?
Yes, we had some girls that went to a school called St. Olives and St. Saviour's. One of those eventually ended up in the army in later years, at the end of the war.
Do you mean schoolgirls?
Oh yes, schoolgirls, yes, yes.
Where had they come from?
London.
Well, yes. No, I can't remember what part it was now.
Somewhere in the East End?
Yeah, yes.
How did they fit in with things?
Oh, very well. They settled in quite well. Became part of the family.
What was the attitude of people that in Chertsey, like yourself and others that you knew, towards the Germans who were carrying out the bombing?
I think much the same as everybody else. (Clears throat) looking forward to the opportunity of joining up and having a go at them.
Was there real hatred of them, or did people think, well, they're just doing their job?
No, I think there was a hatred there because of we'd heard stories from our parents and so forth of what happened in the war before.
Do you think if any of them had been shot down and caught that local people would have harmed them?
No, I don't think they would. Not the people that I knew.
Can you tell me about your own joining up, how it all happened, please?
Yes, I went up to London with a friend and volunteered at a naval office. And at that point, they refused to take me. I think one, because I was underage, and the other was because I was a dental technician. I soon altered that. I packed in my job, volunteered again, and called myself a labourer or a painter or something, and immediately they took me. And I was called up a day before my 19th birthday.
And you went into the Navy?
Yes, at Ganges at Shotley near Ipswich.
Was that just chance that you went into the Navy, or did you have any influence over where you went?
No, I volunteered for the Navy.
What was the training like at Shotley?
Well, it was pretty severe. The discipline in the Navy is stricter than in any of the other forces.
Can you give some examples?
Yes, we had to do things which really did surprise me. One was go over a mast there, which is a tremendous height. And some fellas were really scared of heights. And it was quite frightening if you didn't like climbing. I managed it myself all right. But it could have been highly dangerous if you fell off.
Do you think that it was relevant to what you had to do in the Navy?
I think it was relevant up to a point.
Tradition.
It was tradition, yes, but we did have to climb the mast at sea. Things happen at sea, even on modern ships. I mean, on the mast of a destroyer, you'd have fighting lights and that sort of thing. And being a torpedo man, which I eventually became, we had to cope with all the electrics and lights and things like that. So it might be necessary to climb the mast in a rough sea.
Any other examples of the strictness and discipline at Shotley?
Well, I was rather surprised. The day I joined, or thereabouts in February, there was ice and snow on the ground. And they said, is anyone here can dive into the swimming pool, swim three lengths, and stay for so many minutes, fully clothed? And I thought, blow that in this weather. So I put my hand up, which I could do. You see, I could swim. And thought by saying that I would get out of it. Instead of that, they said, right, grab your towels. We were marched down to this swimming pool. Double doors were wide open, and it was snow outside. And there, on two stools, were wet duck suits, dripping wet, ice cold. Take off your clothes, put these on. And quite honestly, that's not a funny experience. And I think I was probably the first in, because it was so cold once we got these wet suits on, I just went straight in, and I passed that test. Now, I thought I was unlucky at that point, but I didn't realise that those fellows who could not swim were taken down later and were pushed in the deep end, and there was a man there with a long pole to hook them out if anything went very badly wrong. And they had to go through this until they could swim. And I thought that was pretty severe.
Did any of them just fail to learn, despite the...
No, as far as I know, they all learned. And the other thing was, we used to have gun drill, of course, as part of the training. It was mainly seamanship and gun drill. And we'd train on this 6-inch gun, which is the largest size for hand feeding with shells and so forth. And if someone mucked about, and they often did, then they would be handed a shell which was very heavy and told to go and get one of the instructors to sign his name on it in chalk, who would be about a mile away. And believe me, by the time they got back, they were on their knees carrying this thing. That sort of punishment they got.
Were you punished yourself?
No, not there, no, no. I managed to get on with the drill without any problems. I remember on one occasion on parade, we were doing rifle drill, and one fella just could not get on with a rifle, and he threw it on the ground, and you can imagine what he called the rifle. And of course, he got thrown into the guardhouse pretty quickly.
Did he ever learn to cope with a rifle, do you think?
I think in the end he probably did, but it was some time before we saw him.
Were you allowed to smoke there?
At certain times. But they had an awful prehistoric thing there that really shook me. They had what was known as spit kids.
Spit what?
Kids. Quite large.
Like spittoons, you mean?
Right. Now, in the Navy, you're not allowed to spit on the deck. And so they had these spit kids all over the place, and this was the official place to spit. Well, normally I don't spit, neither did half the people that were with me. But one then got the awful job of cleaning them out that someone else had been spitting in.
Spit kids?
Yes.
K-I-D-S?
Yes.
What was the general attitude of those in charge of you towards the volunteers?
Well, of course, we got called all the usual names. Discipline was very strict. We were supposed to jump up, stand to attention if anyone spoke to us. I did get called on one thing which I thought was silly. I don't mind discipline, but I don't like it when it gets too silly. And I had to cross a certain piece of road in order to see the officer in charge on that day, the officer of the day, with a request that I had. And so I walked across the road to this office. And immediately I was almost run off my feet. I was told I was on the quarter deck. It looked like an ordinary piece of road to me. And I thought I was going to be put on a charge for that. I think if I'd done it twice, I would have been. This is the sort of thing that really got my goat there, you know.
Had you been told it was the quarter deck?
Well, someone may have mentioned it, but to me it was a road. and there were other things that never went down with me, and I never used the system. This ridiculous thing which is now used today of 1800 hours. How can you get 1800 hours when there's only 24 in the day? And I had a perfectly good watch which told me it was 3 p.m. in the afternoon, you know. So I always went by my watch while they shouted their umpteen 100 hours.
A 24-hour clock.
Oh, their 24-hour clock, yes.
But when you said they shouted all kinds of things at you, were they allowed to actually swear at you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Or were they allowed to touch you or physically punish you?
No, I don't remember anyone being hit.
So there was no flogging or anything like that?
I didn't see any flogging, no.
Did you feel that the training that you got at Shotley did anything for you, for what was to come later?
I think they really did extremely well, considering we had 6 weeks training and we were then fully fledged sailors. I don't see what else they could have done in the time.
But how different were you in your attitude and skills by the time you'd finished that 6 weeks from what you'd been when you first started off?
Well, we did have tests on the way on seamanship, the running of a ship, the parts of a ship, what was expected of us to do on a ship, the watches and so forth. And, of course, we had training on the gunnery. And we also went out in a small whaler, rowing and sailing. So we did have some idea of what went on. And obviously they wouldn't put all new recruits on one ship. They'd be mixed in with others.
Did the training inculcate a different attitude from that which we normally associate with civilians?
Very much so.
In what sense?
Well, the very first thing that they taught us when we went there was how to salute to the front, how to salute to the left, and how to salute to the right. Which really got my goat. I thought, well, I haven't joined the Navy to go around saluting people. But of course, this was their strict discipline. And you can see that that had to come first. And there was this tremendous division between officers and men, always. There was only one occasion when I ever spoke to an officer, man to man, on board a ship, when we just chatted for a few moments. Discipline there was. It was them and us.
But did you think it was fair enough, or did you think it wasn't right?
No, I didn't agree with it. Discipline I do agree with. And certainly when on a ship and when in action stations, we need strict discipline. Everybody must know who they are and what they're doing and obey orders. But when there isn't action stations, I think they could be more friendly. There's no need to be too friendly, but more friendly with the crew.
But they were really insisting on acknowledging hierarchy and rank.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Where did you go to after your 6 weeks training at Shotley?
Chatham Barracks.
To do what?
Well, really, Chatham Barracks is a place where you are awaiting to go to a ship or here, wherever, you know. They give you jobs to do. There's jobs in the cookhouse, there's sweeping the roads, there's doing this, there's doing that, you know. There's the dockyard there. And everybody would be lined up and they'd say from here to here, dockyard, and off you'd go, and you'd be helping on the ship, perhaps scraping the side or painting or doing something or other. But it really was bad when I went to Chatham.
What was so bad about it?
Oh, we get to the tunnel. In the first place, the food. It was overcrowded, terribly overcrowded. And when it came to lunchtime, all I could find was a saucer and a teaspoon. And I had to scrape my lunch, my meat, whatever it was, onto this saucer and eat from that with my teaspoon. When I'd finished, if I wanted a sweet, I dipped this saucer, this greasy saucer, in a bucket of cold water. And then the sweet was put on. And with the same spoon, I ate the sweet. And that was that. It was horrible. It was overcrowded. It was dirty. We had to sleep in a place called the tunnel for safety. And there was never enough berths in the tunnel. So you were more or less on the floor.
Was it an actual tunnel?
No, it was one that had been built, a tunnel right underneath there, for safety reasons.
Like an air raid shelter?
Yes. But there were thousands of sailors there. And I think they emptied half the prisons there too.
What?
I went to Anson Block there, yes.
Was it really dirty?
It was, yes, it was, I mean, there was loads of things like cockroaches about and all that sort of thing. It really was a rotten place to be. And people would do anything to get out of it.
So when you say there were cockroaches there, was that because food was left about for them to eat?
Well, they were very old buildings. Very old buildings. Heaven knows how far back they went. Victorian times, I should think, perhaps before that, these old buildings. And I suppose once you get well and truly infested with these things, it's difficult to get rid of them. Very difficult. Yes, I did make a move while I was there for a short time, and I went to another section of the barracks, which is known as D Company, where I was put in the colour guard, which was considered to be something rather special, but it really was just a case of you were good at the drill. And in the morning when the ensign went up, you went along with the marine band and you presented arms, and the officer in charge would salute with his sword. And that was the colour guard. Apart from that, we also had training then on machine guns and so forth of different types. They were all old pre-war or First World War machine guns. And one I remember in particular, I think it was the Hotchkiss, which the army had thrown out in 1914, and our RAF wouldn't have anything to do with it, and we discovered it in 1939. But it was a useless machine gun. It kept jamming all the time. I would hate to have to rely on it. The Lewis gun was much more reliable. But we had to learn how to dismantle them and put them together and get over stoppages and that sort of thing.
What were your fellow recruits like?
At that time, they were quite reasonable. More or less like myself, from similar sort of backgrounds.
But you were talking about some of them being criminal.
Oh yes, that was in the main barracks. Whilst I was in Anson Block in the main barracks, I was sitting down, very depressed, eating a meal, when